saw that just on the other side of this plain, the pilgrims came to a place where there stood an old monument, right beside the highway, at the sight of which they were both concerned because of its strange form, for it looked to them like a woman transformed into the shape of a pillar. They stood looking at it for a long time, but could not tell what it was. At last, Hopeful spied something written on the head of it in an unusual script, but he, being no scholar, called to Christian, for he was well educated, to see if he could figure out the meaning. So he came and finally found that the words said, "Remember Lot's wife." So he read it to Hopeful, after which they concluded that this was the pillar of salt into which Lot's wife was turned when she was fleeing from Sodom, and looked back with a covetous heart. This unexpected and amazing sight gave rise to this conversation between them. "Ah, my brother," said Christian, "this sight came at an opportune time, right after the invitation Demas gave us to come over to view the hill Lucca. And had we gone over as he desired, and as you were inclined to do, my brother, we would have, for all I know, been like this woman ourselves, a spectacle for those who come after us." "I am sorry I was so foolish," said Hopeful, "and it makes me wonder why I am not like Lot's wife now. For what was the difference between her sin and mine? She only looked back, and I had a desire to go look. Let grace be revered, and let me be ashamed that such desire should ever have been in my heart." Christian said, "Let us take note of what we see here for our help in the future. This woman escaped one judgment, for she did not die in the destruction of Sodom, yet she was destroyed by another, as we see, for she was turned into a pillar of salt." "True," said Hopeful, "and she may be both a warning and example to us, a warning that we should shun her sin, and an example of what judgment will be ours if we do not heed that warning. Just as Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, with the 250 men that perished in their sin, became a sign or example to others to beware. But above all, I marvel at one thing, and that is how Demas and his companions can stand so confidently looking for that treasure for which this woman, who only looked behind her but did not step one foot out of the way, was turned into a pillar of salt, especially since the judgment which overtook her made her an example within sight of where they are. But they cannot help but see her if they only lift up their eyes." "It is something to be wondered at," said Christian, "and it seems to indicate that their hearts are desperately sinful. And I cannot help but compare them to those who pick pockets in the presence of the judge, or that cut purses right under the gallows. It is said that the men of Sodom were sinners exceedingly, because they were sinners before the Lord, that is, in his eyesight, and notwithstanding the kindnesses he had showed them. For the land of Sodom was at that time like the Garden of Eden. This provoked him all the more to jealousy, and made their plague as hot as the fire of the Lord in heaven could make it. And it can logically be concluded then that those who sin within sight of and in spite of such examples set continually before them, to caution them to the contrary, shall be judged the most severely." "Doubtless you have spoken the truth," said Hopeful. "But what a mercy it is that neither you nor I, especially I, have been made an example like this. It is an occasion for us to thank God, to fear him, and always to remember Lot's wife." I saw then that they were on their way to a pleasant river, which David the king called the River of God, but which John called the River of the Water of Life. Now their path lay just along the bank of the river, and here Christian and his companion walked with great delight. They also drank the water of the river, which was pleasant and enlivening to their weary spirits. On the banks of this river, on either side, were green trees that bore all kinds of fruit, and the leaves of the trees had healing qualities. They were delighted with the fruit of these trees, and they ate the leaves to prevent illness from overindulgence and other diseases to which travelers are susceptible. On either side of the river was a meadow filled with beautiful lilies, and it was green all the year long. In this meadow they lay down and slept, for here they could rest safely. When they awoke, they again gathered the fruit of the trees and drank the water of the river, and then lay down again to sleep. This they did for several days and nights. Then they sang, Behold ye how these crystal streams do glide, to comfort pilgrims by the highway's side. The meadows green, besides their fragrant smell, yield dainties for them, and he that can tell. What pleasant fruit, yea, leaves these trees do yield, will soon sell all, that he may buy this field. So when they felt ready to go on, for they were not as yet at their journey's end, they ate and drank, and departed. Now I beheld in my dream that they had not journeyed far when the river and the path separated for a time. They were rather sad about this, but they dared not leave the path. Then the path away from the river became rough, and their feet became tender from walking. So the souls of the pilgrims were much discouraged because of the way. Therefore they wished for a better pathway. Now a little ahead of them there was on the left-hand side of the road a meadow, and a set of steps by which to cross over the fence into it, and that meadow is called Bypath Meadow. Then Christian said to his friend, "If this meadow lies alongside our pathway, let's go over into it." Then he climbed the steps to see, and behold, there was a path running along the other side of the fence. "It's just what I was wishing for," said Christian. "Here it is much easier going. Come, good Hopeful, let's go over." Hopeful asked, "But what if this path should lead us out of the way?" "Oh, that's not likely," said Christian. "Look, doesn't it go along parallel to the pathway?" So Hopeful, being persuaded by his friend, followed him over the fence, and they found this path very easy for their feet. Then looking ahead, they spied a man walking as they did, and his name was Vain Confidence. So they called out to him and asked him where this path led. He said, "To the celestial gate." "Look," said Christian, "didn't I tell you so? See, we are right." So they followed, and Vain Confidence went before them. But behold, night came on, and it grew very dark, and they lost sight of the man ahead of them. The pilgrims now, to gratify the flesh, will seek its ease, but oh, how they afresh do thereby plunge themselves new grief into, who seek to please the flesh themselves undo. Therefore the one who was ahead of them, not being able to see the pathway, fell into a deep pit, which was put there purposely by the prince of those grounds to catch vainglorious fools, and he was dashed in pieces by the fall. Now Christian and Hopeful heard him fall, so they called out, asking what had happened, but there was no answer, only a groaning sound. Then said Hopeful, "Where are we now?" But his companion was silent, afraid that he had led him out of the way. And now it began to rain and thunder and lightning in a dreadful manner, and the pathway began to flood. Then Hopeful groaned in himself, saying, "Oh, I wish I had kept on my way. Who could have thought that this path would lead us out of the way?" said Christian. "I was afraid of it from the very first," said Hopeful, "and that is why I was cautious. I would have spoken plainer, except that you are older than I." "Good brother, don't be offended," said Christian. "I am sorry I brought you out of the way and put you in such imminent danger. Please forgive me, my brother. I did not do it with any evil intentions." "Be comforted, my brother," said Hopeful, "for I forgive you. And I also believe that this shall be for our good." "I am glad I have a merciful brother with me," said Christian. "But we must not stand here like this. Let's try to go back again." "Let me walk in front, good brother," said Hopeful. "No, if you please, let me go first, so that if there is any danger, I will be the first to encounter it, because it is my fault that we have both left the way." "No, you shall not go first," said Hopeful. "You are upset, and this may cause you to lead us astray again." Then for their encouragement they heard the voice of one saying, "Let thine heart be towards the highway, even the way that thou wentest, turn again." But by this time the waters had risen greatly, making the pathway back very dangerous. Then I thought, "It is easier to get out of the way when we are in it than to get in when we are out." Yet they tried to go back, but it was so dark and the flood was so high that in going back they were almost drowned 9 or 10 times. Neither could they, with all the skill they had, get back that night to the place where they had crossed the fence. At last, finding a little shelter, they sat down to rest until morning, but, being weary, they fell asleep. Now there was, not far from that place where they lay, a castle called Doubting Castle, owned by Giant Despair. And it was on his land that they were sleeping. Therefore, when he got up early in the morning and walked up and down in his fields, he caught Christian and Hopeful asleep in his property. Then with a grim and surly voice he told them to wake up and ask them where they had come from and what they were doing on his land. They told him they were pilgrims and that they had lost their way. Then said the giant, "You have trespassed on me by trampling in and lying on my grounds, and therefore you must go along with me." So they were forced to go, because he was stronger than they. They also had little to say, because they knew they were at fault. The giant prodded them on before him, and put them into a dark dungeon inside his castle, a nasty and stinking place to the spirits of these two men. Here they lay from Wednesday morning till Saturday night, without one bite of bread, or drop of water, or light, or anyone to ask how they were. Thus they were in this evil situation, far from friends and acquaintances. Now in this place Christian had double sorrow, because it was through his ill-advised haste that they had gotten into this trouble. Now Giant Despair had a wife, and her name was Diffidence. So when he went to bed, he told his wife what he had done, that is, that he had taken a couple of prisoners and cast them into his dungeon for trespassing on his grounds. Then he asked her what he should do with them. So she asked him who they were, where they came from, and where they were going, and he told her. Then she advised him to beat them without mercy in the morning. So when he arose, he got a heavy club made from the wood of a crab tree, and he went down into the dungeon to the prisoners. First he scolded them as if they were dogs, although they never spoke a word of complaint to him. Then he beat them so badly that they were unable to move. After this he left them in their misery. So all that day they did nothing but sigh and moan bitterly. The next night, the wife, in talking with her husband about them further and learning they were still alive, advised him to counsel them to kill themselves. So in the morning he went into them in a surly manner as he had before, and seeing they were very sore from the beating he had given them the day before, he told them that since they were never likely to get out of that place, their only escape was to do away with themselves, either with knife, rope, or poison. "For why," said he, "should you choose life, since it is filled with so much bitterness?" But they asked him to let them go. With that he gave them an ugly look, and rushed at them, and no doubt would have killed them himself, except that he fell into one of his fits, for he sometimes in sunshiny weather fell into fits, and lost the use of his hand for a time. Therefore he withdrew, and left them as before to consider what to do. Then the prisoners discussed whether or not they should take his advice. "Brother, what shall we do?" asked Christian. "The life we now live is miserable. For my part, I don't know whether it is better to live this way, or to die without delay. My soul chooseth strangling rather than life, and the grave looks better to me than this dungeon. Shall we take the giant's advice?" "Indeed, our present condition is dreadful," said Hopeful, "and death would be far more welcome to me than to live like this forever. But let us remember that the lord of the country to which we are going has said, 'You shall not kill another person.' Much more, then, are we forbidden to take his advice to kill ourselves. Besides, he who kills another only commits murder upon his body. But one who kills himself kills both body and soul. And moreover, my brother, you talk of ease in the grave, but have you forgotten the hell where murderers go? For no murderer has eternal life. And let us consider again that all the law is not in the hand of Giant Despair. Others, as far as I can understand, have also been captured by him, yet have escaped. Who knows but that God who made the world may cause the death of Giant Despair, or that at some time or other he may forget to lock us in, or he may soon have another of his fits and lose the use of his limbs. And if ever that should happen again, I am resolved to take heart and try my utmost to get away from him. I was a fool not to try to do it before, but my brother, let's be patient and endure for a while longer. In time we may escape, but let us not be our own murderers. With these words, Hopeful calmed his brother, and they endured the dark together that day in their sad condition. Well, toward evening, the giant went down into the dungeon again to see if his prisoners had taken his advice. But when he got there, he found them alive, and barely alive was all. For what with lack of bread and water, and by reason of the wounds they had received when he beat them, they could do little but breathe. But he did find them alive, at which he fell into a terrible rage and told them that since they had disobeyed his counsel, they were going to wish they had never been born. At this they trembled greatly, and Christian fainted. But after he had revived a little, they once more began to discuss whether or not they had better take the giant's advice. Now Christian again seemed to be in favor of doing this, but Hopeful replied, My brother, don't you remember how brave you have been heretofore? Apollyon could not crush you, nor could all that you heard and saw and felt.